Hello, listeners. This is the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington, on 1150 AM. The program focuses on Out of This World information, including psychic phenomena, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. We will have only the best psychics and astrologers and others in the world on our program, and I guarantee, my friends, it'll be the most interesting radio program you've ever listened to, as you will hear information here that you will simply not hear elsewhere. We are also the fastest-growing psychic and metaphysical radio program in the world, and now I'm happy to tell you that we have listeners in over 55 countries on all the world's continents. Today we have a split show that I guarantee it'll be really out of this world. For the first hour from 2 to 3 p.m., we have Tamara Junker, who will be talking about relationships. She will be coming to us live from her office in Fort Collins, Colorado. For the second hour, 3 to 4 p.m., we are very fortunate to have Yuri Geller. Yuri is one of the world's best remote viewers, and he will be joining us live by telephone from London, England. For a list of our upcoming guests, please see our website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. But before we go to our first guest, Tamara Junker, we will be having Scott Lemrio, a Hollywood actor, director, and author of the Ceres Agenda, on for a few minutes to talk about the significance of the anniversary of the atomic bombs at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Both Japanese cities, Hiroshima was bombed on August 6, 1945, and Nagasaki was bombed on August 9, 1945. Today is August 8th, and it was 69 years ago this week that both atomic bombs were dropped on these cities. I know I have many listeners in Japan listening to this program, and I hope you will find Scott's commentary on the atomic bombs interesting. Scott, are you there?
Ed.
All right, great. Scott, could you tell my many listeners around the world a bit about your background?
Well, my background basically started with some exploration, out-of-body experiences when I was 5 in Utah, and then I had some extraterrestrial-related experiences, benevolent in my case, that led me on a journey to explore purposefully hidden truth, which is, I think, the direction we're going in a little bit today.
Absolutely, Scott. Absolutely. You've written a book called The Ceres Agenda. If people wanted to know more information about that book, could you please give out your website?
Yeah, it's at paralleltime.com, P-A-R-A-L-L-E-L-T-I-M-E.com, all one word. And also, the book is available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Google Play, and also iTunes and things like this. And it all online in retailers and bookstores, so they can get it if they want to.
Now, the million-dollar question I'd like to ask you today, Scott, is with regard to Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and I know this will be particularly interesting to my many listeners in Japan, how did we get the technology to produce these bombs,
yeah,
and what
mm-hmm.
gave us, do you think, the technology to us, and why?
Well, in my own explorations into hidden truth, I consider myself a hidden truth researcher, which is why the book, The Ceres Agenda, was published. It reveals a great deal about where we got this technology from. We didn't get it and develop it on our own on this planet. The classified arenas around the world have kept that top secret, certainly all these years. Even in Germany, Hitler's people got it from people from out of town. And what I mean by out of town is from extraterrestrials, not necessarily the good ones. Most of them are, but a few are not. And this technology was, I would say, breaking an off-world treaty amongst extraterrestrial races, given to certain people here to try to infiltrate this planet. That technology was developed originally, started to be developed by the Nazis, and later U.S. scientists developed, later the Soviets did. But where we got this technological ability overnight, and what we've been enjoying as products and other things in the last 60-plus years, was delivered here from people from very far out of town, from extraterrestrial races, under a treaty that was arranged during Eisenhower's term as president.
Could you please tell my many listeners the year of that treaty?
I'm not exactly sure. It's not something I know as far as the actual... You mean the treaty between Eisenhower. It was out of Edwards Air Force Base. He met with two groups. One were benevolent at first, and others were totalitarian. And it's with that totalitarian group that he signed a treaty. He was kind of blackmailed into it.
To help you out, Scott, the year was actually 1954, from what I've read.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, good. There's two main groups of ETs which visit this planet, my many friends around the world. and to those outside of the world listening as well, because I know I have a lot of listeners out there. The first group is called the Galactic Alliance. They are a group of 435 million planets comprising approximately 7 trillion individuals, mostly human, all benevolent, who care deeply about us, and we're actually seeded from them. They're mostly human. They look just, many of them look just like us. On the other side of the coin, there's a group of what I call the bad boys, the Reptilian Empire. And this is the group that Eisenhower signed this treaty with in 1954. For those listening, 1 week from today, we will have Laura Eisenhower, former President Dwight D. Eisenhower's daughter, to talk about this treaty and what her father told her directly. She's extremely credible in what she has to say, and she will say things she's never said before on any media regarding this treaty. So please stay tuned for 1 week from today. Scott, I have to ask you this question. Well, if these ETs, and I assume these were the reptilians that gave us, did they give us this nuclear technology to destroy ourselves?
They don't really, in my experience, they're not respecters of human beings. So they're really trying to get control of another piece of property. They don't care if we have nuclear materials or radioactive isotopes. And yet off-world, amongst the great races out there, making radioactive materials, building bombs, is strictly forbidden. It's completely outlawed. So you have to, the listeners need to take it from there to understand why someone would purposefully provide this technology in secret, breaking an off-world treaty to put it here. It's not for our benefit. Fortunately, the Galactic Alliance and those beings are hard at work in beginning to neutralize what they've done to bring about a transformation to this planet, a very unexpected one.
Quickly, we've got only a couple of minutes left, Scott. How would people out there, they can go to your website or they can go to mine at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just scroll down to your name. We've had you on my show here several times. We'll be having you again on September 19th next month. But I was going to ask you, how do people protect themselves if they need protection?
I would do something using a special vibratory word known as hue. It sounds like hue. It's just sung outward. And it sets up a connection through the pineal gland to connect with benevolent beings only, so people can begin to explore purposely hidden truth in a safe manner.
Wonderful, wonderful. And lastly, for the benefit of my many listeners in Japan, what's your opinion on Fukushima, and why don't you think the Japanese government hasn't shut it down yet?
Well, it's not working. Shut it down. It's they can't get into it to do much with it. You're asking me for my view of it. I must state that the radiation that was measuring 60 rads along the west coast of North and South America up to Alaska has vanished recently in the sea kelp beds and water off the coast. That's a sign of benevolent intervention.
So you're saying that the Galactic Alliance has stepped in and removed that radiation from the coast?
They have, and they're underway doing other things as well.
Isn't that fantastic? Well, it's nice to know that we have...
I think you said Laura Eisenhower was Eisenhower's daughter, his great-great-granddaughter, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, just
I love that, the great-great.
Yeah, something like that, or great-granddaughter or granddaughter. I'm not sure which exactly, but she'll tell you.
Okay, great. Well, it's nice to talk to you today, Scott. Thank you so much for your time today and for letting us know that we do have friends in high places out there.
You're more than welcome. Pleasure to be here.
All right, Scott. We have a good day, my friend, and in a few minutes we'll go on to Tamara Junker. She is a wonderful person. She's an access counselor, facilitator, certified coach, speaker, and meditator. She teaches people around the world what it means to be the source of something greater in their lives, where kindness, possibility, and joy are more readily available than judgment, struggle, and unhappiness. She's a wonderful person. She's actually having a series of workshops and seminars in the Seattle area 1 week from tomorrow. And I'm sure she'll tell you more about that. I just wanted to check with my friend Eric. Is she on the line yet? Oh, wonderful. Tamara, hi. Good afternoon. How are you doing there?
Hi, Ted.
It's great to talk to you.
Here. Thanks.
I was very modest in your introduction. I told people that you were the recipient of 10 Nobel Peace Prizes, and you were just on your third Pulitzer Prize novel. No, I just made that up. But I gave a little introduction. Could you tell my many listeners what kind of work you do and how you help people?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm right now mainly a facilitator for a body of work called Access Consciousness, which I've had the pleasure of being associated with for the last 4 years. And I would say for about the last 15 years, my attention has been on transformation. And there's just something so delicious about transformational artistry that I can't stay away.
Mm-hmm.
So
the
work that I do with Access is really, it gives people the power to change anything that they want to change in their life. And I know a lot of people get frustrated because they try and create change in their life, and they'll try, you know, everything possible, and it just doesn't seem to happen. And I know that's kind of where I was at before I made some pretty significant changes in my life. And mm-hmm. So if I can do it, anybody can do it.
Oh, fantastic. Well, let's say someone out there is unhappy in their marriage, in a relationship, for example.
Mm.
I know you can't give a blanket answer for anyone, but if you're going to start with giving some people some advice, what would you, I know this is a blanket question, but
yeah.
what would you first advise them to do? Maybe look inward, decide what's really important for them, or?
Yeah, I think the old adage, know thyself, still stands true. And, you know, in all the years that I've been doing this work, and I kind of consider myself to be a self-proclaimed pioneer of consciousness, mm-hmm. what I've discovered is that the relationship that we have with ourselves and what I call intimacy, developing an intimacy with ourselves, allow us to live sort of in an intimate way with the world around us, with the people in our lives, with the situations and circumstances and events that occur, just sort of with everything and everyone. And what I've discovered is when we can develop that sense of true knowing of ourselves, it gives us the capacity to really trust ourselves. That's something that I don't think a lot of people can really say, is that they feel, you know, an absence of second-guessing. They really trust themselves to know what it takes to create a life that works for them. So mm-hmm. I don't care what kind of relationship, you know, that somebody's in, whether it's difficulties working in an office environment or family struggles or with a spouse or a significant other, it really doesn't matter. When somebody establishes that strong sense of I know who I am, I know what I'm choosing and what my targets are for creating my life, there is this natural ease that arises, and struggle just seems to sort of melt away. It's like it's like where you thought there were problems, you can't find them anymore.
mm-hmm. I have to tell you, my next guest after you is Yuri Geller, and he's a wonderful, positive guy. He's one of the most, like you, he's a very positive person. He's wonderful to talk to, and he says the same thing you do, that people have actually the answers within them to
yeah.
solve whatever difficulty they have. I guess one of the issues that I'd love to ask you about is a lot of people have problems with intimacy,
yeah.
and some of that can stem from their childhood. I'm sure you know these statistics, but 1 in 5 boys in the United States, and statistically 1 in 3 girls, have been molested at some point in their life. And that
wow.
can, of course, it's high, very high, amazing. And a lot of times it's just hidden within the family. Either
mm-hmm.
uncles, usually it's somebody, it's a relative who's known to the individual, and it's done when they're young, so they don't really bury it for many, many decades.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you do in a situation like that, for example, where someone has a that kind of situation?
Well, the first thing I would look at is anywhere where, because, well, like you said, it's sort of buried. It's sort of something that, you know, the family says, don't ever tell anybody, or the
right.
the person, you know, I mean, there's this idea of you never want to bring this to light. And so there's a sense of shame around the whole thing. And that
mm-hmm.
shame gets sort of absorbed by the person who experiences this. And
mm-hmm.
it can create kind of a stuck point in
mm-hmm.
that informs how they engage with the world for the remainder of their life, until they can take, like, sort of the light of illumination on that, look at it, and begin to dissolve that shame. Shame is really, and I'm not the only one who says it. There's plenty of people out there that know the damaging, toxic nature of shame. So it's really finding a way to look at what occurred, and find a place to be okay with it. And I know that sounds really trite. Like, be okay with it, okay? So,
mm-hmm.
But there's ways of working with that, and I'm sure access consciousness is just one of many, many, many ways that people can begin to transform that in their life, so it doesn't color everything that they're, it can color every relationship that they're in. It can, like I said, it can simply inform how they engage with the world. It doesn't even have to be romantic relationships. It can just be how they operate. Their operating system becomes covered in this layer of shame. So what I would do is I go directly to the source, which is, looking at what is preventing that person from fully being able to shine as the true brilliant being that they are. Because the shame will just, cut that all off and say, no, it's, I'm not worthy or I don't deserve it. Or, it creates any number of stories. And all of those stories don't allow the person to truly live.
Right. Well, good point. Tamara, how long have you been doing this?
Well, I would say that I went through a transformational period in my life about 15 years ago. I kind of spent about 20 years of my life as a blackout drinker, and never really made that wrong. Just sort of, it was the lifestyle, right? It was the lifestyle that I was mirroring that my parents had, and so I was the party girl, and I was having a good time, drinking and drugs and all of that. And then after almost 20 years, I kind of got tired of it. It was almost like the novelty after almost 20 years finally wore off, and I thought, there must be something else I can be doing with my life besides this. And about that time, I was introduced to a gentleman who taught metaphysical classes. He taught meditation and astrology and tarot and, esoteric and religions and occult, like you name it. And I just sort of immersed myself in it because I'd never even heard of it before. I guess I lived sort of a sheltered life. I don't know where all this stuff was, but I had never been exposed to it. So that's when I really, I almost took everything that was in my life and sort of, and just put it in the dumpster and said, okay, time to create something new. And that led me to an exploration of looking at what it was that made me feel like I was at the effect of sort of everything and everyone around me. Like, it's sort of that story of I don't feel like I have a choice, or flat out I don't have a choice, or I can't make anything work. That had been present in my life for far too long. I kind of felt like a walking, talking Eeyore in a lot of ways, and so that's where my quest or my journey to really discover what is that like. Why is it that I feel that way? And what's it going to take to not feel as if I'm living at the effect of everything and everyone? So so that's kind of where it all started. And then I became I was doing energy work at that time. I got into Reiki and different energy work modalities. It's funny how you discover, I can read energy. Like, you just, it was a talent or a capacity or an ability I never knew I had until I started interacting in circles where people were inviting me to have this awareness, and I realized it was sort of natural. So I started doing that right away, and then I was intrigued by the idea of doing coaching. Life coaching was sort of new at that time, and kind of dabbled in that, played in that, but mostly based in energy, looking at energy as the source of everything. And so I don't think I became officially certified until I think it was about 2008, and have just really been interested in what I would generally call transformation ever since. Like, I can't, asking me to stop doing that would be sort of like asking me to stop breathing. Like, it's just so much a part of what I want to do and be in the world. So it's just very natural.
Well, I have to tell you something that I've run into. I'm a psychic, and I give readings to people, and sometimes every once in a while I run into a couple where, let's say, one spouse is very aware of other psychic realms and very into exploring other avenues for knowledge and truth, and then the other spouse, for example, wants to stay in the third dimension, doesn't want to advance. Have you run into that yourself, or were like couples and one person's going off on a different direction than the other?
Yeah.
Are there ways to kind of, because sometimes if that schism gets too large, of course the couple breaks apart, but Are there ways in your experience to try to heal that possible schism between the two?
Well, it's really common. I mean, as you can imagine, mm-hmm. As people share a life together, they don't stay the same. Mm-hmm. So their interests change and what mm-hmm. they want to put their attention on. And so, yeah, what you're talking about is quite common, and I have dealt with that for myself and also with the clients. And mm-hmm. and the interesting thing is it doesn't have to be the end of a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think if their partner doesn't share the same worldview or doesn't share the same interests, that they you know, it's that the relationship isn't going to survive. And I mm-hmm. have found that that's not necessarily true. What really causes the death of a relationship is expectation of the other person. You know, either they must come along on the journey with me, or they must see that, you know, they need to upgrade their worldview or their operating system because I am, and if they don't, then, you know, this relationship isn't going to survive. So expectation is like poison, and it's going to kill a relationship sooner or later, whether it's quicker or slower. So mm-hmm. if there's a space of allowance, and by that I mean really allowing the other person to be who they are and choose what they choose and do what they do, and mm-hmm. If that can be, if both people can really be in that, you know, function from that space, then it really doesn't matter how much the two you know, if they're going apart in other directions because they have different interests or whatever, you know, if the partners are supportive of each other's choices and the activities that they want to get into, that relationship can be sustainable for as long as the people want it to be.
I have to tell you, I've had John Hogue on my program several times in the past, and he's a wonderful Nostradamus scholar. And his philosophy, mm-hmm. he studied Osho, and his yeah. philosophy about that kind of thing is to let, it's like a bird. You let the bird go, and if it's meant to come back, it will. And if it's not, it won't. So he kind of defers to higher spiritual forces. But I really appreciate what you say. I want to just tell my many listeners that if you're just tuning in, this is the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr, on KKNW, 1150 AM here in Bellevue, Washington, Seattle, Washington. For those, would you like to take some calls in a few minutes?
Sure.
Okay, great, Tamara. For those who'd like to call in about 5 or 10 minutes, our studio line here is area code 425-373-5527. Again, that's 425-373-5527. Or if you're calling within Western Washington, I believe the number is 1-888-298-5569. Tamara, I know you have a workshop coming up. Could you tell my listeners about it, please?
I do. I'm very excited. It's a offshoot of the work of Access Consciousness. Access Consciousness is essentially a set of tools, processes, perhaps philosophy, that really give people, and I said it before, empowerment. I mean, that's a word you hear all the time, sort of, what does that mean? Well, the tagline of Access is empowering people to know that they know, to know that you know. So it's really not about a bunch of answers. It's not about a system of, you know, follow the step-by-step system and then you'll get these fantastic results and we guarantee it. It's really about what is it going to take for you to trust yourself? As I said before, if you trust yourself and you trust what you know, then you have so much more ease in creating a life that works for you. So I have applied these tools to my life very deliberately in the last 4 years, and I have discovered that space of peace and ease and natural joy that is available when you trust yourself. So it's not like anyone in Access is telling you what you have to create or what your life should look like. I mean, culture and society does that enough. I think we've had enough of it. So it's really for people who are ready to liberate themselves and create something maybe beyond what the conformist expectations of, you know, our culture and society are. So my workshop is based on the application of those tools and what it's created in my life around what we call the five elements of intimacy. And those five elements of intimacy are honor, trust, allowance, gratitude, and vulnerability.
Interesting. And before, that's quite a bit. That's cool. Before we go into these topics, I wanted to mention to many listeners that I think trusting yourself from a psychic perspective is actually opening yourself up to your guardian angels. I believe in angels. I think there's a supreme being out there, and I think that everyone has at least one guardian angel around them who's always there to help them if they simply open themselves up. And part of that trust is opening yourself up to the other side. The one thing I've discovered for the last 20 years is that when you access the psychic world, which is the fifth dimension and higher, that the only thing available there is truth. Much of what you get in the third dimension here is not true. It's either lying by omission. You simply look at, turn on the news any day and watch your favorite politicians, and you'll, I don't want to criticize anybody, but often they're not telling the truth. And you can readily tell that. But in the fifth dimension, once you access your guardian angels, you can, the only thing you find is truth, is 100% true. And you talked about, very interesting, vulnerability, gratitude, trust. Could you explain that a little bit to my listeners, Tamara?
Yeah, well, each one of these is, well, maybe let me back up for a minute. A lot of people in relationship come from the space of love that is a little bit of a polluted word. And I'm all for love, okay? Like, I'm not a bash love, but when people throw around the word, they tend to often mean different. That tends to mean different things to different people. You could ask 100 people, what does love mean to you? And you're going to get a variety of different answers, much of which includes judgment and perhaps even abuse. So when people find themselves in destructive relationships, they often will wonder, why is it that I keep creating the same pattern of destructive relationship over and over and over with, you know, I could have 5 different partners, but the relationship kind of tends to turn out the same with perhaps a little bit different packaging with a different partner.
Sure.
One of the things that I look at is that let's just kind of take this word love and we'll just put it on the shelf for a little while. Again, it's not that I'm bashing love. It's just let's look at these elements that we can sort of delve into and get really, really look at with much more attention. That if we were to develop these elements of honor, trust, allowance, vulnerability, and gratitude, might that be the gateway to what many people call unconditional love? It's like, you know, it's funny that we have the word love, but then we also have unconditional love. As if, I mean, my sense is, why do we need two? Like, if love was truly unconditional, why would we have unconditional love?
Yeah, pardon me to interrupt. I think the Beatles were right when they said all you need is love, and they were referring probably to unconditional love.
Yeah. So it's really, it's kind of a, it's an invitation to go beyond what maybe you believe love to be, and what people believe love to be, like I said, can include a lot of judgment or even abuse in a variety of different forms. So it can trap people. It can keep them in a very destructive relationship with themselves that allows them to then be in a destructive relationship with others that don't, you know, treat them with honor, treat them with gratitude, treat them with allowance and those types of things. So it's really sort of opening up a whole new door of possibility of what can be created in the realm of relating and relationship and intimacy.
Well, the way I agree with you 1,000%, Tamara, and sometimes, looking at this from the psychic perspective, sometimes people, before they reincarnate into this lifetime, they actually make contracts to go through certain life experiences. And sometimes, I think when they are experiencing abuse or recurrent pattern of abuse in this lifetime, it's actually from an old karmic debt that they're paying off. You know, I don't have all the answers, but that's what I've been told from the other side. So they have to go through this life and experience the abuse, perhaps, that they meted out to somebody else in a previous life. It's very interesting what you're saying, and I'm so glad you're able to help people. When are your seminars, by the way?
Before I forget. They are going to be held in an area called Renton, which those of you who are in Seattle area, you'll know where that is, and the Larkspur Landing Hotel there. The workshop, The Five Elements of Intimacy, is 10 to 6 on both Saturday and Sunday on the 16th and 17th. And
okay.
I'm offering an introductory night on Friday evening, because a lot of people sometimes, this is the first they've ever heard of this, but maybe it's intriguing to them. Maybe there's something about this body of work that's calling to them, or something that I'm sharing about my experience, or, you know, what I know is possible to create in this realm. And so, you know, I would invite people to come on down on Friday evening. I'm doing a talk from like 7 to 9. Registration, I think, is open at 6:30. It's just going to be a casual evening where people can ask questions, and I'll be talking about sort of some of the elements that will be in the workshop, and that will give people a sample to discover if there's something of interest there.
Well, good. Do you have the address where the motel is?
My goodness. I can find it in about 2 seconds.
All right. Well, I'll keep talking away then.
I've got it right here. It's 1701 East Valley Road. It's Larkspur Landing, Renton. Apparently,
okay.
It's kind of at the crossroads of two major highways, so it should be accessible easily from wherever you are.
Actually, it's probably only about 5 minutes from the studios here, so it's pretty easy to find. There's Bellevue, and then there's Renton, so they're right next door. So anyone, and if you have more questions about the seminars, feel free to give me or Tamara a call. My toll-free number is 1-888-879-8339. And Tamara, would you like to give out your phone number where people could call you or?
Sure. I have a facilitators page on the Access Consciousness website. That's just accessconsciousness.com. People can reach me there. My phone number is listed on there.
Okay. All right. Do you think your techniques could be applied, for example, on a national level between countries to help people get along better in the world? Because we have so many conflicts in the Middle East. I have to tell you, about 2 weeks ago, I did an intention experiment with Dr. Masaru Emoto from Japan. He's the world's most famous water scientist.
Yeah.
And he has done, for my listeners who don't know him, he has done wonderful, interesting experiments with water, where he's taken two glasses of water. In the first glass, he asks his audience to send love and light to the water. And in the second glass, he asks them to send hate and negative thoughts. And so what happens is that he looks at the water molecules under the microscope. Guess what happens? Under the microscope, in the first glass of water, the water solidifies into these beautiful crystalline structures, very, very pretty, like snowflakes. But in the second glass of water, where people have sent hate and negative thoughts, the molecular structure of the water is completely disjointed. So we did an experiment about 2 weeks ago at 3:30 Seattle time. We sent love and light to the Palestinians and the Israelis in Gaza Strip to stop fighting. And so then after this show, I didn't really think about it very much, but then I got to where I was staying at about 8:30 at night. I turned on CNN, and the Israelis and the Palestinians had just decided on a spontaneous 12-hour ceasefire to take effect within a half hour at 9 p.m. Seattle time. So I was quite happy about that. I did an intention experiment actually a week ago, and then they had another ceasefire for 3 days. Could we do that again? Would you mind if we sent
powerful stuff?
I'd like to do that. I don't like to see people killed unnecessarily. I know that they've been fighting for a long time. They've got tremendous conflicts there. But I don't think anybody in their right mind, you know, wants to see people die, certainly. So I'd like to take a minute now, with your permission, and just send love and light to the Palestinians and the Israelis in the Gaza area, so that they can have another ceasefire, perhaps, to bring medical supplies and food into the affected areas, and for them to find a way to settle their differences in a peaceable way, in a fair and just way as well. It's worked for the last 2 weeks, and I sincerely hope it works again now. So anyway, Tamara, tell me about some of your personal stories with people, and for example, how, you know, like a memorable story where somebody's come in with a relationship issue or intimacy issue, you've been able to help them.
Oh my gosh, so many.
in 10 words or less, please.
Sure, that's possible. I, for more than 20 years. I don't remember exactly, mm-hmm. but we had a mutual friend who was had just shared with us that she was going to get a divorce, and this woman who'd been married for more than 20 years, I mean, she was just aghast. She was just like, oh my God, I could never do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at the time, she'd been in this relationship for more than 20 years, and it was an abusive relationship, meant, you know, emotionally, physically as well. And she just, even given all of that, she could not imagine getting a divorce and leaving her husband. Her point of view at that time was just, you know, well, I've got all this history. I have my children. You know, it's like she couldn't come up with good enough reasons and justifications to leave, regardless of how, you know, how the relationship was. And a lot of people, it's like there's this sense that if the abuse I'm receiving is accompanied by love, or, you know, whatever that person's version of love is, then it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that astounding and very prevalent, that if the abuse I'm experiencing is accompanied by love, somehow that makes it okay.
Right.
So anyway, over the course of working with this woman over a period of time, I really didn't do much but ask questions. And I think as a facilitator, I don't have a point of view about what a client chooses. It's really none of my business.
Right.
My role is simply to invite them to have greater knowing about what is or isn't working for them in their life, and if something isn't working for them, what are the possibilities of change that they could choose. So I really just simply asked a lot of questions, and over the period of working with her, she was able to discover that, you know, something else in her life was possible. Like, she didn't have to continue to endure this relationship with her husband. And so mm-hmm. she did end up divorced, and she did end up meeting somebody new and got married a second time, and has a life now that, you know, back in those years previous, she literally couldn't have imagined. And I think this is the thing I find most delicious in the work that I do, is that mm-hmm. many of the people, when I start working with them, they literally cannot imagine a life beyond what they have. Like, mm-hmm. either it's resignation, or they just don't see how, or, you know, I've tried and tried and tried, and I've sort of, you know, whatever the thing is, they literally cannot imagine a life beyond what is. And so in working with them, sometimes, you know, remember, everybody's different. Maybe sometimes it's a short period of time, sometimes maybe it's a period of years. Their lives will transform, and they will, I mean, the letters of gratitude and appreciation that I receive, not for what I did, I mean, they mm-hmm. had to choose it. They had to actually have the courage to take the steps and create it. But mm-hmm. they tell me over and over and over and over, I never knew life could be this way. I never mm-hmm. knew. And I think that's the thing that just lights me up, and I get goosebumps, because that's how my life is. Like, I never knew, you know, mm-hmm. even 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I never knew my life could be like this. My life is unrecognizable. And as, you know, I use the word transformational artistry. It truly is. When you can create a life that's so far beyond anything you ever could have imagined, that's mm-hmm. that's magic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. For a lot of people, unfortunately, they sometimes get abused when they're young, mm. so that when they do get into a relationship, they think
yeah.
abuse equals love, and that's the only thing that,
yeah.
that they know.
Yeah.
And so if, for example, the first or second relationship falls apart, guess what happens? They end up getting involved with another person who's exactly the same way. Of course, person's got a different name, maybe a different personality, but it's the same pattern over and over
yeah.
and over again,
yeah.
which is sad. And I'm so glad that you can help people. In domestic violence situations, I know it's a recurrent pattern where, let's say, a guy comes home drunk, beats up his wife. She calls the police. She can call the police. He gets arrested. And then the next morning, she's down at the station trying to get him out, saying
yeah.
that he's a wonderful man, he acted out of character, alcohol, he
yeah.
doesn't drink that much, blah, blah, blah. I've seen that happen many times, unfortunately. It's really sad.
Mm-hmm.
And then the courts try to heal that relationship, of course, with anger management, which is sometimes works, sometimes doesn't, but the person who's doing the violence has to want to change, and if they don't want to change, there's nothing really can be done for themselves.
That is absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
And it's again, the nature of the work that I do in facilitation is to always be supportive of whatever choice the client is making. Like, if that person doesn't want to change their life, and that's something that I will ask quite directly, you know, is this something that you want to change, yes or no? And I don't have, like I said, I don't have a point of view whether they do or not. If they want to change it, great. If they don't, great. They're in the driver's seat.
And sometimes looking at it from a psychic perspective, people have karma to pay, and they're not ready to change. They want to change, but they're not ready quite yet. Or they have karmic debt that they have to pay, that they maybe have been an abuser in a previous lifetime. So they've reincarnated in this lifetime with the same person they may have abused in their previous lifetime to repay that karmic debt. And those answers a good psychic can access sometimes. But it kind of makes you wonder sometimes, because people end up in that same kind of recurrent pattern. Tell me, Tamara, what do you how could your techniques be useful on the international level for like resolving world conflict? Just curious.
Well, again, choice is something that must always be acknowledged, right? Like, I am not in favor of deciding that I know better than another what they should or shouldn't be choosing. So when I'm contributing to any situation, I'm always contributing to what's going to create more for all, what is going to be generative as opposed to perhaps destructive, although sometimes destruction is necessary in order for something new to arise in its place. So that's where, like, I don't want to get too much in my head, in my mind about it, and I stick to the levels of energy. I mean, this is the realm that I work in. I work in the realm of energy. And so in much the same way that you just did, it's like, you know, sending love and light, it's recognizing that I don't think people really have an awareness or acknowledge how truly powerful they are. And choosing to contribute energetically to create something different in the world is something that every single one of us has the capacity to be. And I know that when I do that without a particular fixed point of view about outcome, there's generally much more space for possibility there than if I've decided, well, this is what must happen. This is the outcome that is going to be best for all. If I leave my intellectual point of view out of it, generally that energetic contribution is going to be so much greater than if I limit it by a fixed point of view. So again, you know, talking about internationally, well, there's individuals that make up you know, a religion or a country or whatever. And it really is, I mean, I work with people individually to empower them, if you will, through consciousness, to look at what are the lies and unconsciousness that they're functioning from, that they've bought into, that are, you know, we don't have to necessarily fight polarity. What if we can outcreate it? And by polarity, I mean this very fixed idea that there is a right or a wrong, and I mean in a righteousness way. Like, you know, my way is the right way, and if you're not going to buy my way, then, you know, I'm going to go to battle with you, kind of thing.
Right. Is that the kind of advice you would give Mr. Obama and Mr. Putin if you locked them in a sealed room and told them to work out their differences?
You know, that might be really fun. I'm actually a certified mediator, and I've done a lot of work of that nature with, you know, it doesn't really matter whether it's, mostly it's couples for me, because that's my arena, but that might be really fun. I don't know.
Well, why don't you, if you like, why don't you go ahead and make the offer on air, because I know I do have listeners in Russia, in Moscow, and in the Ukraine, of course, across the United States and in Canada, all over the world. So if you'd like, go ahead and make the offer, and then they can get a hold of you, and who knows what might happen.
Yeah, well, you know, and I do. I have clients around the world. I'm not limited to, you know, lovely. It's we live in a wonderfully technological world nowadays, so rather than dismiss that as something that is, you know, over burdensome, I actually welcome it as something I can use to my advantage. And so I do work with clients all over the world. And my website, again, accessconsciousness.com, I have a facilitators page on there. Or I have my own website, which is Access Infinite Being. And I work privately with clients via Skype or by phone. And I also facilitate classes, like the one I'm going to be doing in Seattle next weekend, and even we'll be traveling overseas to Ireland in October, and potentially, you know, India, Australia. So sure, the globe is my oyster.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I do know that there are several governments in the world which do listen to my program, and I would like to make an offer for those in Russia and also back in the nation's capital that Tamara is available to mediate the differences between Mr. Obama and Mr. Putin, if you so choose. They'd all just need to pay for your plane ticket. Is that all they'd need, maybe?
I think it would have to be all expenses paid.
All right. Okay. All right. That's fine. I just want to see. We may have a caller. Eric, do we have a caller?
No.
Okay. All right. Great. Well, tell me, I want you to tell us a happy story where you've helped a couple, for example, to resolve their intimacy issues, and now they're happy again, and they were going off on the wrong track before.
A happy story about a couple. Well, I've got another, I don't know. I mean, all stories are happy. It's just a matter of, like, sometimes happy equals breaking up, right? It's interesting how, you know, working with a couple that had been struggling in a marriage for 10 years and actually one of them wanted to begin, they had had a monogamous relationship, and one of them wanted to begin exploring polyamory, and the other was not so sure about that. And so it was actually a very beautiful thing, because this created a bunch of trauma and drama in their lives, but short term. I mean, you look at the span of our lives, and over a period of maybe a year to 18 months, there was a lot of tension in that relationship. But what came out of it was that two people who were, you know, exponentially more crystal clear in what it is that they really wanted. And what they realized was they had sort of, yes, they had been married for 10 years, but the husband at that, you know, during the course of the facilitation, realized that he had sort of checked out of the relationship in about year two. Because,
wow.
Yeah, well, and I find this quite common. Like, people will continue to go through, like, they'll get into a relationship and it's fantastic, and, you know, 6 months, 6 years, whatever, and somewhere along the way, it may be something shifts. Mm-hmm. And if they don't pay attention to that shift, and they don't really know what else to do, they just keep doing what they've always done. And so they'll end up kind of turning into this automaton, going through the motions of the relationship until something occurs. And that something in this particular situation was that the wife wanted to explore polyamory. And so anyway, he walked away, both of them walked away from the relationship. They did end up getting divorced, but both of them were exponentially more happy because they were so much more clear in what it is that they wanted in a relationship, and they were actually able to go out and create it after that and find so much more happiness in both their, you know, their lives because they went through that. So, you know, happily ever after doesn't always look the way you think.
Well, from a spiritual perspective, even bad things which happen to you sometimes happen for a reason. And your spirit guides and guardian angels are actually want to steer you in a different path. I know that that's happened to friends of mine, too. Or, for example, they lose their job, or and then they're very happy later because they've started off in a new career, and they would have never gone that way if their first career hadn't ended.
Exactly.
And probably like a relationship, too. They probably maybe wouldn't have met the love of their life if they hadn't been involved with the first person, you know, in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And so my friends listening, if bad things happen to you and you're just sitting there and you're saying, oh, my God, why is this happening to me? Sometimes there's, I'm not saying all the time, because sometimes bad things do happen to good people, but a lot of times it's there for a reason, and it's there that the higher forces are trying to teach you an important lesson with respect to something, or move you in a different direction that you need to move. So it's not entirely all bad. I mean, at the time, it's probably easy to say, well, I feel lousy, when in your seminar on Saturday and Sunday,
mm-hmm.
will you do individual sessions there as well, or just kind of like group group lectures, or how will you work that?
That's a great question. One of the things I love about, because I started out doing private work only, and then I shifted into this group facilitation work, and I discovered I love it both. Like, I love both equally. The beauty about a group facilitation is that there's almost nothing that one person has experienced that other people have not experienced to some degree. So when you do facilitation in a group, if you're working with someone individually in that group, it's quite possible that most, if not all, of the people in that group have experienced something similar, if not, you know, very much the same. So you're actually able to work with an entire group of people by facilitating one person. Now, the work that I do is working with energy. It's not a bunch of intellectual blah, blah, blah. Now, there is information that is delivered, and there's, part of what creates more space in people's worlds is to sort of target what, it's almost like exposing the secrets of relationship as we've known it today that aren't working, that people keep trying to make work and trying to make work and trying to make work. If you can expose all of that, say, well, here's why it's not working. Like, let's just do an autopsy on all of the dead relationships and why people bang their head against the wall over and over and over trying to do the same thing and, you know, get different results. And we all know that that's the definition of insanity. So a lot of it is just exposing what's not working. It's like once you become aware of the operating systems that don't work, it's very hard to continue operating from them. And when we look at things energetically, and there's tools that actually I will use to shift the energy of how someone is functioning, they walk away from the relationship not with just a head full of stuff, but actual change in their lives. And that's what, to me, is fun.
Fantastic. We've got about 3 minutes left on the show, and I just wanted to
fast.
Oh, yeah, I know. Well, life goes fast when you're having fun.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to make a quick announcement, and then I'll give you the last couple of minutes so you can wrap things up, Tamara. But for those who are just tuning in, this is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW, 1150 AM here in Bellevue, Seattle, Washington. We are the fastest-growing psychic and metaphysical program in the world. And you can listen to us during the show at www.1150kknw.com by going live and clicking on the button. Or you can always listen after the show at www.outofthisworld1150.com. I wanted to tell all my listeners, too, that I also do psychic readings. I've got 20 years' experience doing it. And if you'd like a reading, please call me at 1-888-879-8339 or send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. And we've got about 2 minutes left. Tamara, I'd like to give you the floor. And then after we're done here, we'll be going live to London, England to interview Uri Geller, the world's one of the world's best remote viewers. Go ahead, Tamara. You have the floor.
Oh, I would just love to invite people, if they're interested in finding more about the work that I do. It is really quite different, and it's not for the faint of heart. I mean, it's really about transformation. It's not putting a Band-Aid on something so that it becomes easier for you to endure in your life. I work with people who are really looking for true, sustainable change. So I also offer exploratory sessions to just discover if working with me is something that would be a good fit for you. And if you're interested in having a complimentary exploratory session, you can contact me through either my accessinfinitebeing.com website or also the Access Consciousness website, where I have a facilitators page. All my contact information is there. So, if it sounds like something you'd be interested in, contact me and we can set that up.
Wonderful. Well, Tamara, thank you so much for coming on the air today. And I want to tell my many listeners as well that this program is supported by donations and sponsorships. And if you'd like to donate even $1 or $5, the cost of lunch, this would help us to keep on the air. You can use PayPal if you like and just send your information to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. But, Tamara, thank you so much for coming on today. And I hope you I hope you have a wonderful week and look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
All right, Tamara. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Hold on, my friends. We'll be going to Uri Geller in London in a few minutes.